You're listening to the Rural Advancement Podcast. Rural Advancement provides resources to empower, equip, and encourage rural pastors and churches. Join our community by visiting us at ruraladvancement.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rural Advancement. This is the podcast that is by rural leaders and for rural leaders. It is our goal every single week, week in and week out, to bring you content that is not just spoken to the rural church, but is spoken by people who get it, people who have lived, worked, and ministered in small, out-of-the-way places, and people who understand the immense value of the work that God does there. I am your host, Joe Epley, and this week I'm excited to dive into part two of a conversation with Pastors Keith and Samantha Jones. Last week we got to familiarize ourselves with their story and begin to talk about their journey of reshaping their minds and their lives around a rural context. But this week we're going to dive into kind of the call of God, how they've wrestled with it, how they followed it, what that even looks like, and how we can apply it to our lives, as well as kind of highlighting Samantha's book. She's written a book about God and trauma, and so we're excited to jump into that conversation. So please join us as we dive back into this awesome topic. Well, for the next phase of this conversation, I'll ask you both a couple questions about what it has looked like for you to follow the call of God in your life. Like we talk about how I know that Keith, when you and I talked, we talked about this kind of wrestling season, the idea of what does it look like to follow God, even when that is a struggle. And so talk to me. Let's start off with you, Keith. Just talk to me. What does it look like to kind of separate your will from God's will, right? Like this incredible idea of like, what does it mean to actually dive into this conversation?
Yeah, well, it's painful. it's a difficult good start. Process. I think one of the things that's fascinating that I haven't broadcasted here, even at Cadillac, where I love this church. I love where we're at. I love the lifestyle that God has put us in. It's been a perfect fit for us. But I remember when God called us from Finville here to Cadillac, I remember that being a difficult season again of asking God, like, okay, so where are you taking me? Is this when I go back to the suburb church, or is this the rural thing? And trying to figure out what that would look like. And I remember that was really when Paul in Galatians talks about nailing your passions to the cross. And he talks about the wounds on his body for following Jesus and picking up the cross and following or bearing the scars. In Jesus' name. And I think that for me, it's one thing that happened in Finville of saying, yeah, I'm going to love the people that are in front of me. God has got my back, and he's got the back of this community, and he's going to work through this. But then when it came time for another transition, it was really that putting to death the passions and I had to relearn what it meant in a practical perspective to say, okay, God, I'm not going to force any door open like I did when I was applying for all those jobs earlier in my life, trying to stay out of ministry and stay in IT. Like I didn't want to do that again. I wanted to move forward. And there was this constant wrestling with God that I had to keep having and going through it. And you have to get to the point where it's just like, I surrender. Mm. God knows what's better for my kids. He knows what's better for my soul. He knows what's better for my wife. He knows things that we don't know. And when we accepted the job here, there was a moment there right before that we got the offer. And I remember that night, Samantha and I looking there, and I remember just there was still just a little bit of this. I've got to walk all the way through. And I've got to put to death the things that my preconceived ideas and let it happen. And since we've been here, it has been absolutely fantastic. Like, again, I know we've only been here 6 months, but the lifestyle that we have, the doors that got open for our kids' schooling, for the house that we have, for the community that we're involved with, the amount of support that we have here, it has been transformative. And it happened from the inside out, but it took a while. I think that transformation from the inside out doesn't happen in that 6 minute song, right? Like it happens over a long period of time and the continual walking out. And I think this ties back to the Abraham thing. I think you gotta start walking, and then God will provide for you as you walk. Way too often I found myself wanting to see, okay, this is how this is going to play out. And it doesn't play out the way that I want. God's going to push me a little further than I want to go. And as I walk by faith, he will bring in what I need for that season. And it ends up being so much better than I could think or imagine.
Yeah, and I love that you kind of use that language of saying, you know, it really takes those steps to see God work it out. Because what I've noticed is like our story, like our faith rather, is built on stories of people who did take the step. And now we read their biographies and we read their testimonies of like, man, I had no idea what was going on, but as soon as I, you know, took the leap, well, then God met me with provision and grace and favor and love. And even if it was hard, like he still showed up in real ways. And I do worry that if we don't adequately wrestle with the will of God in our lives, if we don't adequately put ourselves to death, we'll start to lose some of these stories in our Christian history of like, man, remember when we did put ourselves to death? We did the hard thing. We went to the town that had a population smaller than anywhere on our list, you know, and yet we still got to see God. And so, Samantha, why don't you fill us in? Because I like biblical parallels. I think all of us, the longer we walk with the Lord, we see these kind of parallels with certain characters in the Bible. And you guys mentioned that your story feels a lot like the story of Abraham in some ways, you know. And so I would love to hear about how that story kind of has affected and guided your lives, even as you walk through the call of God.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I feel like it's one of those where Keith sees my life as an Abraham story more than
okay.
I'm willing to say
that
it is.
Love that.
I know what he's getting at there. I have had the experience of following God means that I don't have connection with my family of origin pretty much on any side. And so then it feels like God has continued to reshape that in trying to get at my own internal desire for connection and family and stability. And so I think what God has done in our life together and in ministry is that, you know, God told Abraham to go and to leave his family behind. We could spend a whole time on how he doesn't fully obey and keeps Lot. And then there's this whole issue there. But Abraham does actually continue in that all out, all in faith. This is what I'm going to do, and following God, even if it doesn't like just where he said to go. And he just kept going. He kept making the next step that was put out in front of them. I think for us, like Abraham, like I think we specifically in the Abraham text were like, oh, he's like the father of all of us, like all this amazing blessing. But there's like so much that Abraham had to wait for. Like,
yeah,
it's like years and years and years. And yes, he takes things into his own hands and messes some things up. But like, don't we all? Like, isn't that all a part of our lives where we go through this process of we hear from God and we put everything on the line to follow him. And we might do some things wrong, but I don't feel like Abraham had a glamorous life. I mean, he lived in tents and he wasn't, you know, like his whole family was nomadic and he had to watch and look out over the promised land, knowing that it was going to be like his generations in the future were going to receive it. And even like when God promises to Abraham, he says, for 400 years, your children are going to be enslaved in Egypt and I'm going to take them out. Like, that's pretty crazy that God gave that level of detail to him. And he's like, I'll do whatever you ask of me. And so I think that as I've continued to think about Abraham's story in light with mine, I think the greatest privilege that I've had is that God has asked me to define family the way he defines it, which is that he has blessed me to be a blessing to others. And that's the beauty of the church, is that the church is that picture. And I think that the rural church specifically has this wonderful connection and privilege that's still unique to the community, where people, when they're hurting, do actually come to that church and want the family that's there. And so I think that if we all are in this process of trying to figure out, well, where is God called me? How's he going to use me? Well, I think he's going to use what you've given up. And like, I've given up family to be a follower of Christ and do what he asked me to do. And he's given me a family through my family with my husband, but also like through the church that continues to grow and that I have to keep surrendering to God's way of doing it and not to some like desire to have some sort of life that's full of, you know, numbers. And we brought out a big trough and there was like 18 people baptized one Sunday. Like that might happen in a rural context, but it's more going to be like, here's
yeah.
like, we had the privilege of a young girl that got baptized. She just was so excited because she saw someone else be so excited to be baptized. It had been
wow.
the first time in 20 years that anyone had been baptized in the church.
Wow.
Like, that's,
yeah.
You know, it's an amazing thing. And there's just privilege in being a part of those things that will never make the headlines, but change someone's life forever. And
yeah.
like Keith would never say this, but there's three or four people in our ministry experience that are literally alive because he did one-on-one ministry with them. They were struggling with suicide ideation.
Yeah.
Got them into professional counseling, but they walked through a journey with him. And that just doesn't happen if you're not showing up and actually surrendering to what God's asked you to do. So this was in our notes, and I'm just going to say it because sometimes when it's written, it's worth reading.
Yeah, no, read it out. Let's hear it.
But I believe Key said it, so I don't want to steal it, but I am going to read it for him.
Good.
It says, "My will makes me look good, and God's will makes me look like Jesus."
Oh, wow. See, we could stop the whole episode. We won't because we have more to talk about, but we could because that was a great line. I mean, that's just an incredible concept, man. And I really love how I think we overlook, like, because Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, these kind of fathers of the faith, in a sense, have been viewed through such a noble lens. Like, we get the benefit of history and we see how God used them to fulfill his call. But we also have to remember that, like, they lived super boring lives, like, typically.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, it was all, and I say boring affectionately, but it was all just ordinary stuff. Like, Abraham was like, yep, I moved here and took care of my flocks and eventually had a kid. And that whole thing on the mountain was pretty exciting. But other than that, like, life was pretty chill, you know? And Isaac, I mean, we know even less about, like there weren't these big dramatic shifts in the call of God. And I love hearing you say where it's like, hey, it stops being about the headlines. It stops being about whatever these buzzwords we throw out, impact and influence and, you know, being viral in a sense. And like, and it just comes down to like, what if I did what God asked me to? And that was the point, you know? And so I love the parallels with Abraham's story. For the last bit of this conversation on calling, Keith, I want to flip it back to you. And, one of the things that I think we need to do well is not just be philosophical, because I think we have to be deep thinkers about the call of God, but we also have to look at it pragmatically. Like, if someone says, you know, to you as a pastor, hey, I want to follow the call of God on my life. I want to know that I'm hearing from God. How do you direct someone practically to discover and then follow like the call of God on their life? You know, like, what is it? How do we dig into it? How do they learn it? How do they walk it out? You know, and so walk us through some practical ramifications of what this conversation means.
Yeah. So trying, when God was tearing apart my worldview and fixing me up,
sure.
I really got in. That's when I was also kind of spurred me to finish my master's degree at AGTS. And I really felt like I needed to understand prayer. And I would encourage anyone who's trying to figure out the will of God versus their will, you got to learn how to pray.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot of things that go into learning how to pray well. I think you need to learn about it and you need to practice it. Because that's the foundation, right? It's when Jesus was ascending into heaven, he didn't say that he was giving us the Bible.
Sure.
He said, I'm giving you the Spirit, right? And I think that's really important for us to remember.
Yeah, geez. I've never even thought about that in those terms. Gosh, go on.
Yeah. And so he says, this is what I'm giving you. I'm giving you my Spirit. And then the Spirit is what gives us the Bible. Like, we stand strong on the Bible. And I love that the Assemblies of God and the Pentecostal movement, like, we got to be Bible first. If it's not within what our understanding of the Bible, we can't go there. That's our boundary markers for us. But knowing that, so it's about a relationship with Jesus. You know, again, Abraham didn't have the Bible either. Like, it was a relationship with God. It was a relationship that we have to have. And then followed up then by understanding how other people have understood the Bible. Like, read it for yourself, figure it out. I followed, I did my final paper, it's a 50-page paper on John 17. Jesus' prayer before he goes to the cross. And I think
Oh, that's awesome.
really diving into how Jesus prayed. What did that look like? And then reading out what theologians say, reading what other great thinkers who have dedicated their life to understanding and hearing God, hear what they have to say. I developed a spiritual mentor, my mentor from undergraduate. I've stayed in contact with him, Bill Doctrum, just an amazing man of God who has spoken into our life time and time and time again, that we still meet with every so often, probably a couple times a year. And listening to what he has to say, what his bouncing things off of him, listening to friends, close friends. And, for those of us who are in ministry, we need friends who aren't in our church. We need friends that can speak into our life and correct us and do some of those things. And then I also think, we need the church family as well, like the people God has put in your community. But for me, if I want to discern the difference between my will and God's will, it comes down to prayer. And understanding how do I hear God, who's going to speak differently for each and every person. He's going to reveal to them something unique in a way that they can hear it. And when you get good at that, I think that's a critical skill for going to heaven. Like, we're going to be talking to him a lot. So we can learn that now. And I think that's an eternal skill that is really important. And like we said a couple of times, I think it's this surrender and this saying, okay, Jesus, where you've planted me, I'm going to do the best I can today. You've given me my daily bread for today. What can we do to glorify your kingdom and to bring whatever I have in my hands into kingdom stuff?
Well, one of the things our mentor says is like, if God's not answering, does he actually care about the decision? Like,
Oh,
because we
interesting.
have this false, like, that God cares about everything, even down to like the lunch that we have. At least
Yeah,
that would be
exactly.
the
Should I have an
struggle.
avocado with toast for breakfast? Should I have an orange and some whatever,
But I think if God really cares about the decision he's going to tell you, he just might have you in a season of waiting. But sometimes I think it's like he trusts you to make a good decision.
Yeah, because I do think like one of the things that I think also plays into the call of God is like I think when you are a kid or new to the faith, I mean, whatever age you find yourself new to the faith, there's a sense in which Christianity is like something that is happening to you. And so God gives guidance in a way that feels like it's him pouring out like, okay, go there and do that. And then I think at some point, and I don't know if it's perceptible, and I highly doubt this is a very raw theological take. This is not really like a fully developed thing, but I do believe there's almost a sense in which God invites us to be what he always intended us to be, a true partner in building the kingdom. And so I think once you make that shift of saying, oh, my Christianity is not just something that happened to me, this relationship with God is now like it is a partnership. And I think that there's a trust that comes with that where God says, I know that I've now pointed you in the right direction. So the decisions you're going to make fall along maybe a broader path than just saying, okay, go exactly here and do exactly that, And so you get to kind of have fun with that, And so man, what a good take. Let's pivot a little bit. That has been just such good wisdom by both of you, and I love that you've been poured into and now are pouring out to others. But I am excited to dive into our final talk here, which is really Samantha, focusing on your journey as an author and kind of this book that you have come out with. Now, tell us the title of the book, what led you to write it, and then talk us through kind of the basic premise of it. Give us a little bit of a sneak peek, if you will. We're going to throw that link in the show notes. I wish we had time to develop, and dive into what I'm sure is a very thorough and very thought-through work in the scope of a podcast. But in the meantime, give us that preview. Talk to us about what it is and what led you to write it and all those things.
Yeah, so the book is called God and Trauma, The
Ah,
Lessons
there
in
it is.
Learning. Yeah, so it's kind of that two different things. And what I really felt several years ago, I felt God calling me to share the story of how trauma affected my relationship with God. Because the thing is that trauma is widespread, and it's something that happens to you. Usually you have no fault in it whatsoever, and you have to live with the consequences of it. I mean, that's kind of how sin is in the world, right? Sin happens to us. We are also involved in sin, but we have to deal with all the consequences. And so for me, what I felt God was asking me to do was really open up and give a safe look into what it does to your heart and to your soul. when you have to live with the long-term consequences of someone else's sin. I think one of the blessings of my life is that while my past is extreme, because it was extreme, it required me to go through the process of transformation with the Spirit. And I intentionally felt like God told me, I don't want you to write a book that's here's the steps, 1, 2, 3, 4 steps to get through this or just to get to the other side. But I want you to open up and share and show how this works. And so the book is, it's just a purposeful sharing of that. I joked that I feel like it's all of my spiritual and some of my psychological breakthroughs of the last like decade.
Sure. Which, really what a cool scope, first of all, to put it really embedded in the context of your story. Go on. But
yeah, but it's not a biography in any way, shape, or form. It is much more of this journey theologically through how trauma affects you, what pain does, how the church and people are so, like, we're masters at avoiding pain when, you know, what the suffering of Christ gives us is a way to go through pain with him in a way that helps heal and transform us. I purposely use only Bible scriptures as a part of it.
Wow.
I have a lot of, like, there's a lot of psychological books out there that are great.
Right.
There's a lot of things that I've devoured, but what I want is I wanted someone to open up and show me that the thoughts and questions I had about God and having to endure suffering alongside a spiritual journey was that it's okay to think and feel certain things as long as the truth is what comes out at the end. So like, are you going to believe how you feel about these things? Are you going to believe what the Bible says about truth and what the Spirit reveals? So there are moments in it where I open up my journals and I literally give an unedited version of a journal prayer that I had with God.
Oh, wow.
But it is a journey from, even in the title chapters, it's like starts with pain and it ends with joy.
Oh, I love that.
Not a fake joy or a manufactured joy, but what joy truly looks like when you're walking through an honest and open relationship with God.
Wow. Man, first of all, I love that. Thank you for seeing what I would call just an open spot for further, you know, we talk about it in academic terms, for further research, you know what I'm saying? Of just like, I think there is plenty of psychology, plenty of how to, plenty of, you know, you could dive into the real steps, but to take just a thoroughly scriptural, thoroughly biblical approach to like finding God throughout the process, I think is huge. I can't promise much because I've got about, as we all do, about 100 unread books on my shelf, but I'm like, well, I could buy one more, you know, this sounds like a great one. And so, you know, Keith, I'm going to throw this at you real fast, but I mean, you've written, you know, Sidecar to Her Journey and writing this story. You know, what's your take on kind of this cool achievement from your wife here?
Yeah. I think when we want to walk with someone through trauma, through difficulties, it is a sticky, difficult, confusing process to go through. And one of the things I appreciate about the book and one of the other aspects of it is it's been very helpful for me and for a few other people who maybe not have gone through trauma themselves, but are walking alongside someone who goes through trauma. It gives them the ability to, and she talks specifically about things to say, things not to say, ways that we over-spiritualize trauma or we minimize experience. And there's a lot of really helpful information. So I don't think this is just for people who have experienced trauma. I also think those of us who walk with those who have experienced trauma, it can be really powerful and really helpful. And as pastors, I mean, we're constantly dealing with people who have experienced massive trauma in their life. And by and large, I would say a lot of pastors, especially the ones that I know in the AG, probably come from families similar to mine. A lot of them are good families. We all have our dysfunctions, but it's not that severe. And then we don't understand what it's like to be on the other side. So walking, being married now 14 years, and going through the journey that we have, has given me a better perspective for walking with people. When I've had the opportunity to walk with people with suicidal ideation and other severe things in their past, I've been able to pull out of the information I've learned from Samantha to offer that up. So I would encourage those who have the opportunity to read this, don't just give it to somebody who's going through trauma, because you, one of the things I've told a couple of people since it's been released is, be led of the spirit on when to give this to someone.
Sure.
Like, why don't you read it? And they need to be in the right place at the right time to be able to read this book. Otherwise, it ends up being difficult if they're not ready for what's on the page.
Wow, man, what a good 1-2 punch. Now I really got to order this book. I'm really ticked now, because I'm like, man, can I afford another book? I'm absolutely going to afford another book. So this is a great take. I love it as a tool. And honestly, I'm a fan also of just resources that can be more at the popular level, because I think something that happens often in the rural church is that, you know, we might not, stereotypically, the rural church doesn't come from a background of like a ton of degrees and a ton of trainings and a ton of, you know, sometimes it's just a pastor out there being like, well, I'm doing the best I can, you know? And so I love that there's a good companion piece that would not only help people process their own lives, but also to walk alongside others. And so, man, I just want to, we could dive into it a lot more. We can't, we won't, we don't have time, but I want to say thank you, Samantha, for offering up your journey. We'll definitely have a link to check out that book and purchase it in the show notes. But I do want to say to both of you, thank you for being on the podcast today.
Yeah, thank you. We
thank you.
Appreciate
thank
it.
You for having us. I really appreciate this opportunity. And if I could just make one more thing, plug here. I feel like, I've had the opportunity to work with a lot of rural pastors recently on a grant that Evangel and AGTS are working on going through. And one of the things that rural pastors have an advantage in is their community. They can really seize the opportunity to be involved in their community. And a lot of rural pastors end up doing counseling in areas that they don't feel equipped to do. And so I think trying to find resources that can equip you well is really important, and I applaud all the pastors on who listen to this podcast who are trying to equip themselves for where God has planted them. Try not to cry, but you guys are my heroes. Like, I think
wow,
that's where ministry is done. It's on the front line of the people who are in the school system, who are dealing with things that they don't know how to do. My prayer is that the Holy Spirit would give you wisdom and direction, and that you guys would be who Christ has called you to be, where he's planted you. You guys do it, and no one sees what you go through, but we care. And I've experienced some of that, and we love you guys, and we pray. I don't even know you, but I know I'm praying for you.
Man, thank you for that. And man, thank you. Seriously, I think that just, it's true. We're in this together. We're all trying to figure out, and I love that we have people behind us. And so, man, well, again, your lives, your story, your journey, your authorship, I love that you guys have shared it with us today. From all of us at Rural Advancement, we just want to say thank you for tuning in. Again, it's our goal every single week to provide you content that isn't just yelled at you from afar, but is really right in the trenches with you, that is spoken right to where you're at. And so, again, it's always great to leave us a review and a rating. I could use a few more of those at any given time. But true to rural form, the best way to share this podcast is going to be to just find another rural leader and say, hey, there's some conversations you have to tune into. We'd love to check out. And so for this week, I have been your host, Joe Epley. They have been Keith and Samantha Jones, and we will see you next week.